From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After 7 days of being on strike in the nation's second largest school district, Los Angeles's 32,000 educators went back to work on Wednesday. More than 2 years of contract negotiations finally ended when the Los Angeles Unified School District and the United Teachers of LA announced an agreement in a joint press conference alongside LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. Later on Tuesday afternoon, a vote was held among union members who passed the agreement, officially ending the strike. Did the teachers actually get what they demanded? And can the LA strike be a model for teacher-led struggles in other parts of the country? Joining me to help answer those questions is Professor Chuck Flores. He's an assistant professor of educational administration in the Division of Applied and Advanced Studies in Education at Cal State LA. Welcome to the program, Chuck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So this is being cast in the media as a major victory, but I thought it was unusual that UTLA President Alex Caputo-Pearl spoke at a joint press conference with Austin Buettner, who's the LAUSD superintendent, before the teachers voted on the agreement, almost pressuring them, if you will. What did you make of the way things played out?
You know, I thought it was interesting as well because, after the mayor spoke, of course, the union president Caputo was introduced, but he felt that the teachers at that point would ratify the agreement, would agree with it. And again, I found it interesting that the voting didn't take place until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But he sounded hopeful that given the concessions that the district made in regards to the demands being placed by the union, that the teachers would ratify the vote and agree with what was finally was written. I wanted to mention too the fact that in talking to a number of teacher friends that I have, I was a former principal and teacher with the district. Some of them felt there was a lot of pushback. Some Facebook pages had a lot of negative comments about the proposal that was finally arrived at.
Let's talk about what those might be. UTLA released a summary agreement of the of what was agreed to with the district, and there's a lot to discuss. So I understand among the main concerns, the main demands that teachers were making, that class sizes were way too big, and there's a whole section on class sizes. And as far as I can tell, class sizes will be reduced, but by literally 1, 2. Maybe 3 students. As far as I can read, it looks like there will be a cap of 39 students, which sounds like a lot.
You know, that is a large number. The most immediate thing that stood out for me was the fact that 7 students in secondary math and English would be removed immediately. That's something that's going to happen according to the contract that was drawn up. But I've got to tell you, though, that the number of students in classes, I mean, has increased quite a bit since I was a principal. I used to be at Robert F. Kennedy Community School as a principal. We had collaborative type teams making decisions that were best for our students, and we kept the number low. Interestingly enough, my stepdaughter is now a student at RFK Community Schools, the Now Academy, and she had mentioned to me that her biology class was 40 students in number. I was literally shocked by that because we never had students in those numbers in our classes, but it seems I guess I would say that anything going in that direction, reducing the number, would be beneficial to teachers. But at the same time, it doesn't seem, when you look at it, let's say from the public point of view, that how could they agree on something so small? Because it's still going to be that large number of students that teachers have to deal with.
Right. For a parent to have their child in a classroom with so many other children who are all vying for attention from their teacher, 39 still seems like way too high. I thought the issue of nurses was a little bit better. We were hearing, you know, when I was out on the first day of the strike speaking with the educators, one of the big complaints was that it's ridiculous there wasn't a full-time nurse on staff. So if a child needed, a student needed medical attention, and it was the nurse's day at another school, and the nurse just wasn't in that day, the teacher had to end up administering medication or calling the parents instead. So now this agreement, I understand, will mean the district will hire 150 full-time nurse positions, and there will be a full-time nurse at every school 5 days a week. Is that a win?
I do believe that's a win. You're correct in stating that the number of nurses that are available for our students on campuses, I mean, was minimal at best. And for the most part, nurses were scheduled on some campuses 1 or 2 days a week, sometimes just a few hours for the day. So in terms of the needs of our students, definitely, I see this as a win. I was actually on the line as well at El Sereno Middle School on Monday, the first day of the strike. And the people that I was walking with in line were nurses. And they felt that we really need to be out there in numbers to really serve our student community. So I do believe that's a big win in terms of what the union was asking for.
Librarians were also, somewhat victorious. The district said it will hire 41 full-time teacher librarian positions, a full-time teacher librarian at every secondary school campus 5 days a week. But I thought counselors, and these are, you know, psychologists, right? These are people that are helping to deal with the mental health of students, which in a school district as diverse and low income as LAUSD, I imagine there's a big demand for counselors. And there was a similar complaint that counselors were being shared across campuses far too much. But the agreement will only result in the hiring of 17 additional full-time counselors. And that position is the only one, aside from, you know, unlike the nurse and librarian positions, that will not be guaranteed a full-time counselor per school.
You know, it's interesting because I saw that as well. That sort of stood out to me, the fact that there's 17 additional full-time counselors by October 2019. And the other thing that sort of struck me,
this is a district of 900 schools, right? So 17 additional full-time counselors.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense. But, you know, in terms of support services, which is one of the demands that the union was asking for, we're also looking at, for example, a psychiatric social workers on campus. We're looking at, for example, we have some attendance counselors that also work with students. But so the counselor at a secondary school, for example, is primarily focused on academics. That's not to say that they don't assist students in times of need, but that number is minimal at best. And I don't see where that's really going to make a big impact on our schools. I mean, 17 additional full-time counselors. It's almost almost laughable, seriously. Mm-hmm.
What about the issue of the salary increase? When the district offered the teachers a salary increase in December, that was basically all they offered, a 6% increase. I understand that remained on the table, that wasn't whittled away, but does that mean a 6% just for this year?
The salary increase actually goes back, it's 2 years. So initially, the union had asked for 6.5%. The district kept pushing back on 6%. So there was some agreement on that, but what's going to happen is that the first part of that increase will be for the school year 2017-2018 that's already passed. 3% will be given to teachers retroactively. The second part of that, the other 3%, is retroactive to July 2018 of this past year and extends to 2019.
I want to play for you and our audience a little clip of School Superintendent Austin Buettner speaking on Tuesday at the press conference where he appeared with Mayor Eric Garcetti and UTLA head Alex Caputo-Pearl. This is what he said when making the announcement that a tentative agreement was reached.
Public education is the ultimate labor management collaborative, and this agreement reflects this in spirit and in letter. We entered contract negotiations with four objectives, and this agreement will achieve all of them. The first was to provide a fair 6% increase to all who work in schools. The second was to reduce class sizes, provide more support to educators in schools, more nurses, counselors, and librarians. The third was to invest every nickel we have in our classrooms while maintaining the fiscal solvency of Los Angeles Unified. And the last, probably the most important, is to strengthen the voice of educators and provide more opportunities for collaboration for all who work in our schools. It's important to note that Los Angeles Unified and UTLA have always agreed that teachers and all who work in our schools deserve better pay, that our schools need smaller class sizes, and that both students and teachers need more support in the form of nurses, counselors, librarians, and others who support both our students and educators in schools. The issue has always been, how do we pay for it? And that issue does not go away now that we have a contract.
And that is Austin Buettner, the head of the superintendent of the Los Angeles Unified School District. Now, Chuck Flores, my guest, if you weren't paying attention, you might imagine that that was the UTLA president. Everything that Buettner said sounded like he was all along on the side of the striking teachers, that these four objectives of the district were basically what the union had been demanding. It sounds a little disingenuous to me. What do you think?
It sounds the same to me because, as you mentioned, the animosity that has existed between both sides over the course of the strike is something else. I mean, I agree with you. It sounds as if he's reading the UTLA position. It's interesting to note, though, the fact that one of the demands was strengthen the voice of educators. And I don't know if you're familiar with ALA, the Associated Administrators of Los Angeles, which is the other side of this. It represents our principals. But one of the statements issued by the president was the fact that this type of agreement would dilute the power that the position that principals have in terms of making decisions at school sites. I totally agree with the fact, though, that we need to make our teachers part of the collaborative team. It's something that I modeled in my school that I felt was very effective in terms of really addressing the needs that our students had. But I agree. I totally agree with you. The fact that it sounds as if Caputo Pearl is actually speaking at that time.
So what about this issue of, well, it's always been the issue of how to pay for it. Now, there were reports that the district was sitting on nearly $2 billion of reserve funding, which is why the union was demanding that the district actually spend some of it. It shouldn't have taken so long for the district to basically decide to spend part of that reserve, and teachers losing 7 days of pay. You know, unlike furloughed government workers, they're not going to get back pay. They've lost 7 days of pay, and that all of this could have been perhaps avoided if they couldn't figure out how to pay for it a month ago. How did they figure out how to pay for it now?
Exactly. I agree with you again. I know that the fiscal solvency issue is something that's been discussed with LAUSD over the last few months, including by the LA County Office of Education. It is a concern, the fact that reports have shown that there were billions of dollars in this pot that the district has. But in order to continue that, and now don't forget the agreement here is for 2 years only. So this means we're going back to the bargaining table. Within another year or so after this contract expires. But I the fact that the district didn't have these funds, the fact that they saved millions of dollars, I'm using the word saved somewhat, I'm just using that word, the fact they saved money by the fact that teachers went on campus is something else, but fiscal solvency is still an issue. And where are these funds going to originate once this pot, let's say, is exhausted?
And of course, the district itself lost, I understand, on the order of $100 million in revenue from the strike, because, of course, students did not attend in very large numbers, and the district gets appropriations based on student attendance. So it cost the district a lot of money as well to have this strike go forward. One wonders what their goal was all along, because they could have come to the same agreement a long time ago. As far as you can tell, were there any concessions that the union had to make in order to get the little bit that they won?
You know, looking at what the demands were and seeing the final agreement reached, I don't see where there's anything that really stands out for me in terms of the concessions. Again, I'm going back to that whole piece with collective decision-making, or let's say shared decision-making. I don't know how strong that's actually going to be. We're talking about local school leadership councils, for example, having a say in school budgets. We're looking at a representative of the faculty sitting in on developing the matrix for teacher classes, et cetera. But I haven't seen where anything was really given up. And apparently there's something out there because, as I mentioned to you earlier on, there were quite a few teachers airing their complaints about the decision reached on the UTLA Facebook page.
Let's talk about charter schools. This was a huge issue. I want to play what UTLA President Alex Caputo Pearl had to say about the issue of charter schools during the press conference on Tuesday.
We talked about charter schools and the importance of investing in existing schools and really having accountability and regulation on charter schools, which is a part of this broader agreement. Charter co-location, making sure that district neighborhood schools are able to actually have a voice when charter schools are given part of those campuses.
And that is Alex Caputo-Pearl, president of UTLA, speaking on Tuesday about the agreement that was reached to end the teachers' strike in Los Angeles, speaking specifically about charter schools. The issue of co-location is an interesting one. Chuck, I'm wondering what, as far as you can tell, was actually reached in the agreement. So basically, you have traditional public schools whose campuses, often without input from the existing school administration, are forced to share with a new charter school. And this has caused a lot of tensions between the two schools. And a lot of the teachers and the union were worried that the ultimate end goal of Buettner was to privatize the LA school system, you know, due to it what has been done to New Orleans schools. So did the union get any make any progress on the issue of charter school expansion?
Well, you know, one thing that was reached, for example, is the charter cap. So the Board of Ed's going to vote on a resolution to establish a charter school cap, and then also the creation of a governor's committee at the next board meeting. But in terms of co-location, I noticed that part of that agreement is by December 1st and February 1st of each year, the district will provide UTLA with a list of schools that may be co-located based on the numbers. As you know, a number of students have moved, and I believe, I might be off on this, but I believe it's about 25% of our students, public school students, are part of a charter. But there's always been a lot of tensions between staff, not so much students, I want to say, but in co-located schools. I know that I've had friends that have been on co-located campuses where there isn't any communication that exists between, the principals of the schools, and it creates a bad type of environment for instruction to take place. So let's see how that develops. That's always been something that the district, or rather the UTLA, has been opposed to, the number of charter schools that are out there that are being put on our campuses.
There's also the issue of testing, finally. I mean, there's much more to talk about, but just finally touching on the issue of testing, a lot of parents and teachers are deeply disturbed by how much testing their students have to go through during their time in the classroom. And according to the summary of the agreement that UTLA released, beginning in the 2019-2020 school year, a joint UTLA-LAUSD committee will be created and tasked with identifying all district assessments. The committee will develop a plan to reduce the amount of assessments by 50%. That sounds pretty good.
You know, no, that is. That is a step in the right direction. And, you know, I for me, for example, as a principal, I mean, I know that we're sometimes bound by these assessments in terms of different programs that the district develops. But the fact that we would reduce it by 50% is, I think, pretty amazing. It's really important to understand, though, the fact that in terms of assessments that take place in our classrooms, formative assessments that we call them, that provides the best type of information for teachers to make decisions based on the needs of students. And these occur on a regular basis. So looking at the summative assessments that take place at the end of the year, maybe pulling back 50%, I think, is a win. It's something going in the right direction as far as our schools are concerned. I'm certain you've heard the fact that a lot of times we teach to a test, schools are so focused on accountability and what have you that a lot of the instruction, authentic instruction, would be pushed to the side just so we can focus on these assessments taking place.
So let's talk about how it was that these teachers achieved this. I mean, even though the agreement is modest, it took seven days, which is still a long time. The teachers did manage to push the district because they had the numbers. We live at a time where unions are a rare creature in our labor movement across the country. There were a lot of teacher organizations around the country watching what was happening in LA. Last year, there were a number of work stoppages in states like West Virginia and Oklahoma. But none of them actually formally went on strike because the right to strike is also not something that a lot of teachers have. What was unique about the LA teacher strike that just happened, and how can it be a model for other teacher-led struggles across the country? I know teachers in Oakland are looking at what happened in LA.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it has to do, I believe, with the demands that the teachers had. I mean, the fact that we've had over 400,000 teachers across the nation strike in the course of the last year is very impressive. One of the big takeaways here is the amount of support that the teachers unit had on the part of the school community. A lot of us were looking at this really as almost a social justice type of movement because of the fact that we're addressing conditions for a student population that is over 70% Latino. One of the other things that I'm sure you're aware of is that over 40% of our teachers are Latino. So the fact that they're serving this community that has great needs in terms of education is something to be impressed by. You know, I've got to tell you that over the course of the week, I just seen the parents rally, seen the teachers rally, the number of people out on the lines was something to be proud about. I was part of the strike back in 1989 as a teacher.
Aha, and that was the last time that there was a strike in LA. Yeah.
Exactly. That was 30 years ago. And the demands back then were pay, of course, but they also had to do with school-based management. They had to do with teachers having to say in electing deans and coordinators, those kind of things. But this strike stands out for the fact that we're looking at the needs of our students. We're looking at what would be best for our students to achieve in schools. And of course, the amount of students that are of a second language, predominantly Spanish speaking, that's something we have to consider as well when we look at the demands that finally were reached and the agreement that was reached with the UTLA and the district.
Do you think that this will have a ripple effect in other parts of the country, looking at the LA teachers' strike? I mean, even though it caused a tremendous amount of personal sacrifice by teachers and, of course, by students, too, who missed out on 7 days of education, that other teachers will be heartened by how it played out.
I believe that the teachers across the nation will be encouraged by what took place in Los Angeles. I agree with you. I mean, teachers, there was a tremendous sacrifice on the part of teachers. You know, we have a lot of teachers that are husband and wife teams that are out there that weren't getting paid, as you mentioned earlier.
Wow, both but salaries on hold.
Exactly. So, I mean, the fact that they gave this up over the course of the week and we rallied as a team. I use the term we. I was an administrator. I was also a principal, as I mentioned earlier, but I do feel that this is a win for the entire school community, and I'm hopeful. I'm pretty much believe that the other unions across the state and across the nation will be heartened by what took place here.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Chuck, and we will certainly see how this agreement plays out over the next couple of years. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Professor Chuck Flores, Assistant Professor of Educational Administration in the Division of Applied and Advanced Studies in Education at California State University of Los Angeles. We've been discussing the LA teacher strike. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.